There's a, it'll just keep running, so it'll pick everything up. Let me just start out here and ask you some general things. Were you born in Muncie?
No, I was born in Greenfield, Indiana.
And how'd you get to Muncie?
Well, that's going to be a long story, but my dad, he was a contractor and built Caswell derricks. And I guess the business running out a little around Greenfield, and he moved to Anderson, and then they moved to Pendleton, and then back to Anderson. My dad died in 1910. So then I quit school, went to work with messenger boy, starting. Want the whole story? It's a long one.
Well, that's all right. I just want to get some idea. About when did you show up here?
I come to Muncie. I was in the, joined the Army in 1917. Was gone 5 years and 6 months, and overseas and all that. And
where'd you serve over there, Roy?
I was in. We went to Liverpool, England. That's where we landed, and then worked our way down to Le Havre or the Southampton, crossed to Le Havre, and worked our way up to Le Mans, France, on our road up to the front. And we went into Le Mans on the morning of the armistice was signed. So never did get to Germany.
Never did get to Germany.
And so they had a busted up the outfit, and some of them went to Ohio.
When were you discharged?
I was discharged in February of 1919. Home 7 days and went on the fire department over at Anderson. The guy hung around there ever since a little kid, and they talked me into it. So I lasted a little over 3 months there. That wasn't for me, and quit. And then in September, I joined the Army again for a year enlistment, and then in 1920, I was discharged again for, I stayed out till November the 2nd, got my first vote for Harding, re-enlisted for 3 years.
Was your family Republicans?
Oh yeah.
Were they strong Republicans?
Yeah. So, hell, when I was a little kid like that, I carried the red flares and torches for Bert and Vestal over there at Anderson. I know them all. And so I was in the Army again 3 years. The last 18 months of it, I drove for Major General George W. Reed and Major General J.H. McRae, and hauled General Pershing on two different occasions. That was a big honor
sure
to me.
Was.
And I got my discharge and went back to Anderson, worked in a foundry a while. That was a trade core maker and molder.
Where was that where you carried Pershing around?
Up Columbus, Ohio. He came in there on a some kind of an inspection trip. The 5th Corps headquarters was there. And that's
you were at the 5th Corps then?
I was driving General McRae at that time, and he was head of the 5th Corps. And I come back to Anderson and worked at foundry a while, and I got homesick for the Army again. I eat that stuff up. So we went up to enlist, and I didn't have had a buddy over there that was with me for a while. And the recruiting offices closed in Anderson. So my oldest brother was over here, and I come over here, and this kid was supposed to meet me, and we were going to re-enlist and go out to the West Coast. So Milt Chapel just opened that garage there at Seymour and Walnut Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Milt Pendleton. Well, in fact, when I was a little kid, I carried the milk to him and his wife when they were first married. And I knowed him for years, so Milt wanted the night man, and I took the job. So that was 1924. And we sat out in front of the garage there one night, my brother and I. His car pulled up across the street there at that old Ohio Oil station there on the northeast corner of Seymour and High. And they had their gas pump and water out there, and this gal had this new Ford that was steaming, and I told my brother, I said, why don't you go over there, and she's trying to get that cap off. And he says, why don't you? You're not married. And so I went over there and took the cap off. I ended up with a date, and her and I went together from then on to 1925. We married them, or you probably know Mary. She was always a bookkeeper there at the old Delaware County National Bank with Mose Black and all that bunch. So we got married and been here ever since.
Now, what were you doing when you were appointed to the state police?
Well, I just patrolman. We rode...
You on the police force here in town?
No, we just all got fired to George Dale.
You had been on the police force in months.
Oh, yeah. I went on my first police job, went on under John Hampton there in 1926.
Okay.
And worked through till George Dale was elected, and he just fired the whole police department.
That would have been in 29?
That was in 29, and of course he took it over in 30, see. So I was Sharp, wasn't it, old Sharpie? He was on, had the state job, and he was about to get fired. I guess he didn't do so good with the booze and one thing or another, and so I put in and worked to get it. And
now, how did you make an application for that in those days?
Yeah, I just made an application.
And got some of the Republican leaders to help you, was that it?
Well, it was, that's what happened. Paul Brady was the county chairman.
Yeah, sure.
And, of course, Paul, he wasn't for...
Byfield?
No.
Leslie?
Barnes, the mayor. Oh. See, when the city race was on, Barnes and that Ferris, the real estate man, were running against each other on a Republican ticket. Of course, the Bradys and the Davises and all them was for Cal Ferris. But when Barnes won it, they all put on that old switch to George Dale. That's
sure.
When Paul Brady's dad went on the police department. And, oh, it's a long story. So I've been through it all. I've been hired and fired by experts. Anyhow, if you want the whole story, might just as well go through with it. So I got that job. And Ralph Young, he was working in the secretary's office down there.
Oh, Ralph was?
Yeah, he was down there. And so I went down the day I was supposed to get out and interview let's get this straight. Yeah, that's right. Old Ralph was down there. But
he was down there doing something. I remember that, but I don't remember what he was doing.
Well, anyhow, I got the job. Earl Rustin put in for it too, but I got the job over him. And I was on that for just a year.
At state police now?
Yeah.
That was called a state...
state motor high, police high, at that
motor
time.
Police.
Vehicle police, okay. I believe.
When were you appointed? Do you remember?
Well, it was in 1930 along in... first and 30 along in there.
Okay.
And I was on there then until election come up. Of course, I was campaigning for Republican, and the Democrat got elected. I rode that motorcycle down there on the 1st of December, turned it in, congratulated all of them on their new jobs, which I always done, make a lot of friends. And so I come back, forget. I think I went to selling cars for Vic Watkins. But anyhow, in 1932, come up for that store license. Was going to go into effect in July, see. So I just figured that I'd put in for one of the jobs. They said what it would be, there'd be 10 or 12 supervisors, and then the others would be appointed and be paid 10 cents a listing to list all the stores, see. That's anybody that owned a store from last half of 1929 up to then.
Mm-hmm.
So, sitting down there at Vic Watkins one night, hadn't sold a car all week. Of course, back 32 is pretty rough.
Tough,
to sell anything.
Damn
even
right.
Pencils and apple. But I got a call on the phone, and guy, Roy, I said, yeah, well, he said, this is Ferris up the Star. And he says, was you after a state job? I said, well, yes, no. Why? Well, he says, you just been appointed the supervisor of the 10th district. I just went like that.
Isn't that right?
So I thought, well, I congratulate him on calling me and all this and that and the other, because boy, you talk about lifting a load off
sure.
somebody's head. So I got the job. And of course, the education, I never had any. I quit school in the sixth grade, so I took a job as a messenger boy. $3 a week to help mother and the other kid. So anyhow, I was on that. Had these people, I had two in Delaware County here, and I had two in Randolph County, and had two in Wayne County, one down in Shelby County, one in Rice County. I had about 10, 12 of them under me. And what they'd do, go out and list these stores, just like if you had that store and
yeah.
from 1929, then you'd owe 2.5 years taxes, or if you bought it and changed hand two or three times, each one would owe so much on it. Well, I went clear through there, and those guys would send those names in every night. And then my job was to list them, the county, and alphabetically and so forth, and then send them on into the state. So it's a good thing I had a wife with the types. So we'd work a lot of times, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, get those lists out. And I was on that until, well, of course, election come up between Springer and McNutt. Naturally, I had that old car pasted with Springer's, all up and down the 10th district on the job, and the guys down the state house. You know how they are.
Sure.
So, them Republicans, that always burnt me up. Be what you're going to be and stay with it. So anyhow, but they says you better get with McNutt. Republican down there. I said no business with McNutt, not in them words. So, of course, McNutt was elected. I was fired again. So there was George Dale, the Secretary of State, the governor fired. There's three. Well, I've been fired by experts. So anyhow, that ended my career there, and I come back, and finally I'd voted for Doc Bunch and over Irie Wilson, which my heart was with Irie, but Doc done me a favor, and I told him I'd be for him, and I did, and I worked for him. And I was the last man to be measured for a uniform when Irie Wilson took over. I didn't think old Irie let me down on account of Mary, you know, being up the bank. But anyhow, I stayed on there till Holloway was elected. And that's when Pete Anthony was running for sheriff.
Yeah.
Of course, I worked for Pete, and Pete was elected. Holloway come in, and Pete was going in. Pete would give me the job as chief deputy, and I thought, well, I've been fired by all of them, and I figured that Holloway would be the next step, see? So I had to quit, and I went over with Anthony. And along come Anthony got out of there. I quit him, and was over there one day at a tavern, and Bud Dale says, well, why don't you, what are you doing? I said, nothing. He said, why don't you go up and see Les? I said, now you know better than that, Bud. Anyhow, we made a bet. I went over to see Les, and he said, well, you didn't have to quit the first time.
Larry Conrad!
How are you?
My goodness gracious!
That's going on.
Yeah, Les!
I'm just looking at your picture all ago.
That's going on. All going on tape.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Every time I go to Indianapolis, I'm Mike. Did you tell me about
yeah,
Mike?
Uh-huh.
And I keep telling Mike, I said, well, you ever see Larry Conrad running around here? I said, yeah, I see.
You have to come down sometime.
Well, I was going to next time I get there.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be darned.
And you look great.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're just reminiscing here a little bit, talking about some old work. Talking about you served three hitches in the Army. Is that
yeah.
Right? Three separate times?
I went in July, or July 7th, I think it was, in 1917. That was World War I. I joined Old M Company of the 4th Indiana Infantry over at Anderson. And then after we were back, discharged, and I left the fire department, I joined the Quartermaster Corps down at Fort Harrison in the Motor Transport Division. And I'd done half of that hitch down there and the rest up at Chicago in the City Motor Transport Corps up there. We hauled all the people from the Army building, the zone supply out on 39th Street and all that kind of stuff. So then after I got to be a corporal and acting mess sergeant, come up for discharge, the old captain wanted to make me a mess sergeant. And back them days, you got a $60 day furlough and a $90 bonus for re-enlisting. And he says, we come back and I'll make you mess sergeant. You take your furlough and get your $90 and so forth. So instead of that, I didn't go back. I just stayed out until November. That's when I re-enlisted then. And I did get my $90 bonus, but I never got no furlough out of it. And come back down to Fort Benjamin Harrison, and I've done the last 3 years of discharge, 1923.
Now, when you were appointed to the State Motor Patrol, did you operate out of here? What
yeah.
was your jurisdiction?
We had Z. Burr was a lieutenant. He lived down at Middletown.
Uh-huh.
And Hal Ayers was a lieutenant in Portland. And Z. Burr had Anderson and all this territory around here to this 40 and down to, over to the state line. And my job was riding a motorcycle. Of course, the lieutenant's the only one who had cars. And I'd start out of here in the morning and like go to Hartford City, then come back and go into Winchester, then to Union City, back to Winchester, down to Richmond, down 40 to Dunreath, and back down through Newcastle and home. That was my district. Hell, I had more territory than the Red Key Post has got.
What was your primary duty? To check on motor vehicles?
Just check on motor vehicle violations and just general. We done a lot of stuff.
What'd you get paid, Roy?
Boy, this will slay you. $125 a month.
Flat? And did you pay for your gas? Or
no, they furnished the motorcycles and the gas. And,
did you get that here someplace? You have a
yeah, we had gave us gas books, like mostly on the Sinclair back in
mm-hmm.
the day. So
Well, what about your firearms? Did they supply you a uniform and a firearm or what?
No, you buy your own uniform and the gun and all that. Yeah, I had more. So,
Now, it wasn't too bad a job.
Would
you have to check in any place during the day or were you
on
your...
Well, I would send in a daily report, mail them in, see.
Let's say that's...
And put down where you was at, what you done in that town, or this, that, or the other, and it got down to the point to where some of them was laying off, you know, kind of skipping a little, and put out an order where we had when we went in. Like I went to Hartford City, I'd go to the post office and get that postmark, see.
Ah.
Then they knowed you was in Hartford City, and of course I always went. I never had any cause not to go, but...
What would happen if they had to get in touch with you someplace? Would they...
Well, they just call my house, and that'd be...
And when you got back?
When I got back, that's...
Well, let me just take you back a minute now to that summer of 1930. Well, the day we're talking about, just for your own edification here, just to bring you up, there was a shooting that took place on Wednesday night, August the 6th, 1930, in Marion, Indiana. It had to do with some black guys and a white man and a white woman.
I didn't know anything about that.
And the person that was killed was a person from Fairmount, Indiana. And his fiancée was with him, and there was either a sexual assault took place, but at least he was shot four times and died the afternoon of the 7th. There were four black men who were arrested and put in jail. And their names were Sullivan, Cameron, Ship, and Smith. And sometime in the late afternoon, early evening of the 7th, crowds began to form and collect. And after a long siege on the jail, the jail was eventually penetrated. And two, Ship and Smith, were taken out and hung on the courthouse square. Now during these hours that all this was going on, the sheriff was a fellow by the name of Jake Campbell. I don't know whether that rings a bell or not. He had a deputy by the name of Bert White, and a number, Lou Linnemuth, was the police chief in Marion, Indiana. There apparently was someone there who was a CNO railroad detective. Go ahead, you don't have to be that quiet, dear. What do you need? Tell her, just tell her.
Virgil's out here to see you.
Time?
Oh, Virgil Taylor.
What time? Come in.
Hey, wait.
Anyway, somewhere in this process, a word was put out to the state and to various local police agencies to respond. And obviously you were part of that because you responded. Now what I'd like to go back and do is to see if you remember how you got the word to go to Marion.
Exactly.
All right, let's hear that.
Well, it was last day of the fair, if I remember correctly.
The fair here?
Yeah. And there was Bob Spencer.
You want a cigarette, Roy?
No, I don't. Never smoke them. And just see if you ashtray over
there. Yeah, I got one right here.
There's Bob Spencer, myself, and Ludeker. Ludeker, he had the district around under Al Ayers. And Bob Spencer was under Z. Bird, same as I was from Anderson. And this other boy, I name just slipped my mind right now.
Now wait a minute, you're talking about Spencer? Who else?
Bob Spencer. And Ludeker, he was worked that district up around Marion.
How do you spell his name? Do you know?
Ludeker, I believe that's the way you spell it.
All right. And somebody else?
Bob Spencer. He was the Anderson man.
All right.
And
Patrolman Charles Ludeker.
I don't know whether his name is Charles or what.
Yeah, that's his name. Ludeker. Okay.
He was a little guy from up north, down in Indianapolis.
right here. Let me read some names to you, see if they ring a bell, okay? Lieutenant C.H. Burr, Middletown. Yeah. Don Chapel, Kokomo.
I didn't know him.
Lieutenant William Donovan, Marion. Patrolman Bentley Easter, Monticello. Patrolman Floyd Fertig, Plymouth. Lieutenant Ralph Fisher, Lafayette. Captain Milo Hershey, Indianapolis. Patrolman Charles Ludeker, Marion. Patrolman Carl Lucy, L-O-S-E-Y, Indianapolis. Patrolman Roy Marvin, Muncie. Patrolman Harley Parson, Warsaw. Patrolman Dwight, P-O-W-L-E-N, Logansport. Petroleum Nick Rawlings, Indianapolis.
Rawlings, that's the one that was with us, yeah.
All right.
Left here.
All right. Captain Joseph Shen.
Yeah.
And Patrolman Robert Spencer, Anderson.
Yeah. Well, we were working the fair out here.
The three of you, or two of you?
Ludeker.
Spencer and you.
Rawlings. Spencer and I.
Oh, four of you, okay.
And we just left down at the gate around about 10 o'clock at night, I believe, something like that. I had the darnest headache, and just seeing the wife, I lived just there on Wills Avenue west of the fairground gate at that time. I was the only house on that street at the time.
What was that address? You remember?
409 Wills Avenue.
And, you saw Mary then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we was going down Midway and up to where we had our motorcycles at the grandstand. And one of these officers, I don't remember just who it was, but come down and said, we've been looking for you guys. And
this is a city officer?
Yeah. And they said they want you over to Marion right away. Been a hanging over there. So we goes up to the grandstand to get a motorcycle. That wild Ludeker, he had a friend there from Peru that worked for the lady that had something to do with the circuses, and she bought him a Studebaker Roadster. And Ludeker says, well, go over in that. Says, get there quicker. Of course, them old gravel road back. And I said, we better take our motorcycle. So anyhow, we loaded into that thing and we got over there.
That was what year of Studebaker?
Well, that must have been 1930. And anyhow, we went across that 18, that gravel and rocks with the flying. Anyhow, we got over there and this old police captain just come out of the jail and his shirt tore down there. And that ground around there looked like this rug instead of grass, you know what, it was where it was all tramped down.
Okay, now before we get to that, I want to back up just a minute here now. First of all, you don't remember who the officer was that told you they'd been looking for you, right? But it was a city police officer.
City policeman, yeah.
Okay.
And,
when you think it was around 10 o'clock at night, something like
around
that?
Around 10, 10:30, yeah.
Okay, can you tell me how you went to Marion, on what road you went to Marion?
We went up 3 to Hartford City and across 18, I believe it is.
All right, was 3 paved at that time? Was 3 paved?
I don't remember where 3 was paved or not. 18 wasn't.
18 wasn't. And you took 18 to where?
To Marion.
To Marion. That was not paved, right?
That's right.
And then do you remember how you went into town in Marion?
Well, just from the east side. I wouldn't know what street.
Okay. You went straight to the jail?
We went straight to the jail.
Okay.
And that street was full, the jail yard was full.
You have any idea what time you got there, Roy?
Well, it surely didn't take us over half an hour or so to drive up there. The way that guy drove scared me.
Was it an open-sided car?
It was a roadster.
It had a cloth top on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So anyhow,
did you ride in the front or the back?
I was riding in front.
With Ludeker?
Ludeker and the driver.
Who was driving?
I think it had a rumble seat, if I remember right, and one of that type.
Oh, and well, then Spencer, did all of them, did Spencer, Ludeker, Rawlings, and you go?
Yeah.
And who drove?
I don't know what this fellow's name was that had the car.
Oh, it was a friend of Ludeker's?
Yeah.
From Peru?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyhow,
When you got there, who was the first person you saw? Do you recall who that was, a name or anything?
I don't know his name, but he was a captain, just come out of the jail with his shirt all tore down, and about half tore off of him.
The uniform shirt, or just...
Yeah, captain of police.
Did he have a hat on?
Yeah, he had his hat and all on, but he... And jail was, they'd been squirting water in there to kill the tear gas, you know. And that was the first of it. And hell, they began to come in there, police from other towns.
What did, were there any other police there from other towns when you got there, or do you remember?
Well, I probably was, but I didn't know any of them or see any of them. The only one that I remember the police was coming in there. I actually see him coming in was from Indianapolis, a couple carloads.
Did that captain say anything to you, do you recall?
Well, they talked to the captain there, Captain Shin.
Uh-huh.
And
he was there already?